This is Vermont Edition, and today we bring you the leading candidates for Attorney General in a face-to-face debate. I'm Peter Hirschfeld. I'm joined in VPR's Colchester studio by the major candidates for Attorney General. Deb Bucknum is a Republican. She's a lawyer from Walden. T.J. Donovan is a Democrat. He's the state's attorney for Chittenden County. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us, Pete.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And listeners, welcome to you. If you're following along on social media, use the hashtag VPRDebates to comment on what you're hearing from the candidates today. Here's the format for the debate. In the first half, I'll ask the questions with help from Vermonters who have been submitting their questions to us in advance of today's debate. Right now is your last chance to submit a question. You can send it to vermontedition@vpr.net. In the second half, the candidates will question one another directly, and if time allows, we'll squeeze in a lightning round before we wrap up. Going to ask you to please limit your answers to 1 minute, and there may be time for follow-ups. We're going to start out this first question directing it to you, Deb, and it has to do with opiates, an issue we've been hearing a lot about in Vermont. You both have called for a public health approach to the issue of opiate addiction, including alternative modes of justice for addicts who are convicted of nonviolent offenses. But Vermont uses a county system for courts, which means that opiate addicts charged with larceny or burglary or other addiction-related crimes face different treatment depending on the county in which that crime is committed. Should Vermont's 14 counties have a unified protocol when it comes to handling addicts convicted of nonviolent crimes? And if so, how would you go about creating one?
That's a great question, Peter. Thank you. Yes, Vermont's system is such that we have a county system. The state's attorneys and the sheriffs are elected every 4 years. Attorney generals are elected every 2 years. So that makes a disconnect. And the attorney general has concurrent jurisdiction in regard to criminal cases. So what you have to do is, because you don't have a legal connection, you have to start by working together and taking the leadership with these various organizations to try to work with them and have them work together on this terrible disease. Now, all of these organizations are concerned about the opioid epidemic. And so I think they will be interested and want to work together to have a consistent approach.
TJ, same question to you, and we're going to give you the full minute to answer. Do we need a unified protocol for how we deal with opiate addicts convicted of nonviolent crimes? And if so, how do you do it?
Absolutely we do, Pete. This is a access to justice issue. We have 14 different systems of justice in our state. We need to have one unified, consistent system of justice. And reforming our criminal justice system is some of the best anti-poverty work we can do. This is the work I've been doing in the last 10 years as Chittenden County State's Attorney. We've done a lot of work to bring alternatives to incarceration, alternatives to the criminal justice system, as well as working with the public health sector, making sure we have an integrated system of care and accountability, and we have to get to treatment on demand. Now, this is what just happened, why we can do this, and I'm going to do it as Attorney General. And Deb is right. The Attorney General does have concurrent statewide jurisdiction, but Governor Shumlin's pretrial monitoring program, which was modeled off a program I started in Chittenden County, just got moved to the Attorney General's office. We can deploy those resources across the state to have a unified, uniformed system of justice based on the pretrial monitoring services and the court diversion program.
I want to ask both of you a follow-up. Has an addict gone too far? If you have somebody who is convicted four separate occasions of a nonviolent crime and people are sick and tired in a lot of these Vermont cities of their cars getting broken into, their houses getting broken into, when do you say is enough is enough and yes, you're an addict and yes, you're dealing with a disease, but you need to go to jail now?
That's another great question. It's a really complex issue, and it takes a lot of experience and judgment from the professionals to make that determination. You know, it's interesting. I was talking yesterday to a young woman in White River Junction at the Restorative Justice Center. And she was in jail for a year. And she had hit bottom numerous times, but this was really the bottom. And you know what she told me? She said she became clean and sober by going to jail. And she told me she would not be alive today if she hadn't gone to jail. So there isn't a one-size-fits-all for everyone. But the approach should be with the addicts, the people suffering from addiction, the first approach should be treatment, no question.
T.J. Donovan?
Yeah, I agree. These are the questions that I deal with every single day as Chittenden County State's Attorney. Here's the thing. This is opiate addiction, heroin addiction is a devastatingly addictive disease. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be a heroin addict. Let's make that clear. But here's the thing. When we have waiting lists for people to get into methadone clinics, when we don't have enough doctors willing to prescribe medically assisted treatment, yes, we're going to continue to see crime. We're going to see those car break-ins, those burglaries, Pete, that you just mentioned. So the best way to address this issue is to expand our treatment capacity in this state.
Question number two, we're going to segue into marijuana. And TJ, we're going to have you answer this question first. A listener named Jean Ann in Brattleboro asks, do you believe that Vermonters should have to write the right to grow their own cannabis or marijuana plants? TJ Donovan.
Let me first start by saying that I was one of the leading proponents of decriminalization of marijuana. I think it was a good thing. And why we decriminalized marijuana in this state, frankly, was because, again, you had disparate treatment based on where you lived. Folks in different counties were being treated differently based on the whims and the will of the prosecutor. That's why we decriminalized marijuana. Decriminalization is different than legalization. I think we need to go slow on the issue of legalization, which includes grow it you're at home, or I'm not sure how the caller referenced that. So I'm a go-slow guy on legalization. I think we have to address the issue of driving. We need a test to be able to drive, to test the level of impairment. And we need to know what the legal standard is with the same as alcohol. Look, everybody who goes out and has a beer understands what 0.08 is. We need a similar test for marijuana.
So to be clear, you do not think at this point in time that Vermonters should be able to grow their own marijuana at home?
Not under a legalized system, I don't, because it's part of the larger debate about what the legalized market is going to look like. And this is a complicated issue. And if it's you can grow it at your home, can you sell it from your home? Details matter on this. And it's not as simple as saying, yeah, let people grow it. Colorado had that issue, frankly. So I have an open mind as to legalization. I think what is going to be telling, frankly, in the next 2 weeks is what happens on the referendums in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, what happens in the state of Maine, and what happens in California. But Vermont is doing this the right way, which I think is go it slow.
Deb Bucknam.
Yes, I am not in favor of allowing people to grow marijuana or legalization at this point for a number of reasons. First of all, every single law enforcement employee that I've talked to, every single drug and alcohol counsel I've talked to is against legalization. But secondly, if we legalized marijuana, we would have to set up a regulatory system in Vermont. And Vermont is a very tiny state. Its population is the size of a medium-sized city. We cannot take on regulation of a substance that the FDA hasn't tested and we don't know a lot about. I mean, there was a study from UVM just a few days ago that indicated that the effects of marijuana are much more drastic on people's brains and their minds than thought previously. And the final thing is, the Attorney General has a lot of tasks to do in the next, when the next Attorney General is elected. And we don't need another lawsuit, which I can guarantee you will happen if we legalize marijuana.
You're listening to a debate between the major candidates for Attorney General, Republican Deb Bucknam and Democrat T.J. Donovan. If you're following along on social media, please use the hashtag VPRDebates. We're going to move on to question three now, and Deb, you're going to get first crack at this one. According to one report, there have been 47 officer-involved shootings in the last 20 years in Vermont. These are extremely difficult situations for police, the family, the communities that are affected. But frequently in these cases, we hear observations from the public that prosecutors and police work so closely together on other crimes that prosecutors are inevitably going to be biased in favor of police and therefore almost always never file charges. As Attorney General, how would you raise the public's confidence in how prosecutors are handling these difficult cases?
Well, I think it is a problem because there's a problem with trusting law enforcement on the part of the public and trusting the system to be able to investigate these incidents in a fair and impartial way. I think one of the solutions, not the entire solution certainly, but one of the solutions is to have cameras on police officers, and I know that's obviously something that's been occurring more and more. So that provides a way, not a complete way certainly, but one way of where the public can see what's happened in the incident. The other thing I think is we need better police community relations all across the board, because police are so beleaguered or feel very beleaguered. And the public sometimes feels that they are being protected. So we need more conversation between the public and the police and more police community relations, better police community relations.
T.J. Donovan, as Attorney General, how can you assure the public that the investigations into these officer-involved shootings are getting the kind of scrutiny and intense focus and unbiased look that they deserve?
Sure. This is an issue, unfortunately, that I've been dealing with as state's attorney. We've had three officer-involved fatal shootings in Chittenden County in the last 10 months. I'm responsible for making those decisions. And as Ms. Bucknam said, the issue of body cameras are always an issue in terms of transparency as to when do you release the body camera. I'm also a prosecutor who has charged a police officer for shooting somebody. A Winooski police officer shot a mentally ill man in the city of Winooski. I charged that officer. And the job of the prosecutor is to follow the facts and to follow the law. So I think we need to do a couple of things. We need guidelines as to when do you release body camera footage. Now, here's the thing. When we've made decisions in these officer-involved shootings, we have done it extremely quickly, but we've never done it at the cost of jeopardizing the criminal investigation. These are homicide investigations. Somebody has died, and you would never release a piece of evidence that could arguably taint an eyewitness's testimony before that eyewitness has been interviewed. So we need strict guidelines. I know the Law Enforcement Advisory Board is working with organizations such as the media, such as the ACLU, reports due December 15th to the legislature regarding the rules of releasing body camera. I look forward to that report. Secondly, I'm a supporter of civilian review panels over the police. The police and prosecutors, we are public servants. We work for the public. We need to enhance the public trust. So we need to engage in greater transparency, but never at the cost of jeopardizing the integrity of the investigation, and continue to invest in the community by having citizen review panels regarding the conduct of the police.
And would these citizen review panels have the authority to impose sanctions on officers if they determined that it merited?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you want a citizen review panel to do is really when we look at these officer-involved shootings, and I can't explain why we've seen an increase, but there are terrible cases, there are tragedies, nobody likes them. And the question regarding the use of force, which is a legal question, which requires a legal analysis, that is really based on seconds of what occurred. What I think the citizen review panels should be engaging in with the police are the larger tactical and strategic operations that the police use in certain situations these circumstances unfold. For instance, high-speed chases. Many police departments now have a policy of not pursuing because of the risk of collateral damage. These are the types of conversations that we have to have in circumstances like the shooting that we just had in Winooski and the two that we had in Burlington. We need citizens' participation, talking about the larger strategic and tactical decisions, and we need to invest in mental health training for police officers.
TJ Donovan, we're going to give you the first go at this next question, and it has to do with private prisons. TJ, you've said you'll seek some kind of executive or legislative action early next year that would end the state's reliance on out-of-state prisons. But bringing home the nearly 300 inmates that are serving their sentences out-of-state right now would require the state to free or otherwise open up 300 beds among the people who are serving their time in Vermont right now. Some lawmakers say you cannot do that without compromising public safety. Why are they wrong, and what are you going to do to make sure that the release of offenders needed to achieve your goal won't compromise public safety?
Well, Pete, let's be clear about one thing. It is the basic obligation and duty of government to take care of people in its custody. That includes prisoners. I do not think it is in the values of the state of Vermont to contract with a for-profit corporation to incarcerate Vermonters in the state of Michigan. Now, we have 1,700, roughly, prisoners in the state of Vermont under our Department of Corrections. I think we can do this in a revenue-neutral way, if not, save a few bucks. Here's how. Let's look at the number of prisoners who are currently incarcerated, who are being held past their minimum sentence, meaning they're eligible for release, but are not being released because they lack adequate housing. Two, let's look at the number of people who are held for violations of probation. Already said they were not threats to public safety because they were given a probation term. Third, let's look at the folks who are in our jails who are mentally ill, and let's look for less restrictive places for them. Fourth, let's look at compassionate release programs consistent with public safety for folks who are sick and elderly in our jails. We can do this, and we can do it in a revenue-neutral way and never compromise our public safety.
Deb Bucknam, what should the state do about the issue of inmates serving time in out-of-state prisons?
I think we need to analyze it. This program has been in place over several administrations. By my calculation, it saves approximately $9 million a year. And as I've said before, some of that $9 million, if we don't save it, can't be used for the addicted mother who's trying to keep her kids and needs housing. So as with any organization, we need to prioritize. And I think we need to focus like a laser on the opioid epidemic and how we're going to stop it in its tracks. So what I would do is a go-slow approach on this. And I would analyze it. I would do a cost-benefit analysis, look to the experts on this issue. I've had clients whose family members have been housed out of state as inmates, and it's very hard on them. But we need to really analyze and look at this carefully and prioritize what's the most important task we need to do as Attorney General.
You're listening to a debate between the major candidates for Attorney General, Democrat TJ Donovan and Republican Deb Bucknam. If you're following along on social media, please use the hashtag VPRDebates. Next question, we're going to explore the issue of racial bias in Vermont. And Deb, we're going to ask you to answer this question first. A 5-year study found that drivers who are African American are 5 times more likely to be stopped in Vermont than white drivers. They're also more likely to be given citations and to be searched. Attorney General Bill Sorrell is leading a work group on implicit bias in police work. What priority will you put on the issue of racial bias in policing? Deb Bucknam.
I think it's very important. And in fact, I'm traveling down to Bennington today to be at that forum, Attorney General Sorrell's forum, because I want to hear what people have to say about this issue. In fact, I was talking with Curtis Reed last night, who is with Vermont Partnership for Fairness and Diversity, and he was talking about this very issue with me. And what he, one of the solutions that he has, and I think it's a great one, is that he thinks we should be a much more diverse state. He came to Vermont back in 1979, and he said in the first 2 years he got to know almost every police officer in Brattleboro. Why? Because he's African American. So one of the things we need to do is make the state more diverse and target people of color to bring them here. And we also need to train, more specifically, we need to train police officers about profiling and about how to approach everybody when they're having a traffic stop. Not to make it a confrontational thing, but make it a service-oriented approach so that people don't feel like they're being targeted.
T.J. Donovan, 60 seconds. What are you going to do as Attorney General to address the issue of racial bias in policing?
This is a major issue in the state of Vermont. The numbers don't lie. This is a major issue in our country. You see this issue being played out in cities like Baltimore and Ferguson, and you see movements and organizations such as Black Lives Matter, which I certainly support. And it comes down to basic fairness, and it comes down to acknowledging the history of racism in this country, the history of institutional racism in our criminal justice system, and that we cannot discount the African-American experience, not only through our criminal justice system, but frankly in this country. And look, we have a problem in Vermont. Ballpark numbers, the African-American population, the general population in our state is maybe 1-2%. Well, the population of the incarcerated population of African-Americans in our jails is 10%. Our incarcerated population should reflect our general population. So I agree with Ms. Buckton. We need more training in terms of implicit bias and being treating everybody fairly, not making assumptions based on people's names, where they're from. Let me tell you, bail reform is a big issue into leveling this playing field, because the issue of where somebody from and the assumptions prosecutors and police make is very dangerous. We need access to justice on this issue, meaning that everybody is entitled to the same alternatives across the state. It's not about 14 different systems of justice. It is about one system of justice where everybody is treated fairly. This question deserves more than 60 seconds.
And I'm sure there'll be other platforms in which you can go into depth on it. I have a related follow-up for both of you, and I'm going to start with you, Deb. An anonymous listener asks, we're seeing more locals who engage in hate speech online and also who collect weapons. How can the state begin to address this volatile mix?
Well, I think that question calls for a couple of assumptions, that people who engage in what's called hate speech also are collecting weapons. I'm not sure that's a connection. But let's talk about hate speech for just a moment. We have a First Amendment. The First Amendment should never be amended as has been proposed by presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. And we have to be extremely careful about limiting people's right to speak. As Thomas Jefferson said, the marketplace of ideas. So my concern is to say, what is hate speech? Hate speech may be in the eye of the beholder. And that, I think, sends you down a very slippery slope regarding how to restrict speech. And by the way, the American Civil Liberties Union agrees with me. Restricting speech is very problematic in regard to the First Amendment.
T.J. Donovan, same question to you.
Thank you. I'm dealing with this issue right now in my job as state's attorney. We had a case in the city of Burlington where a young person was delivering KKK flyers to women of color. Now, I think Ms. Buckton and I would agree, the First Amendment is not an absolute right. You can restrict the First Amendment, time, place, manner restrictions. Now, if this gentleman was on the street corner and was handing out flyers to passerbys and had a sign that said, join the KKK, that is protected speech. But when you specifically intend to direct what can only be described as threatening and intimidating conduct to women of color based on the KKK that has a history of racism, a history of violence towards people of color, that takes it outside the realm of protected speech. I support the First Amendment, but I also support standing up and fighting for people who are being threatened and intimidated and protecting people's civil rights in this state.
You are listening to a debate between the major candidates for Attorney General, Republican Deb Bucknum, and Democrat T.J. Donovan. If you're following along on social media, use the hashtag VPRDebates. Just ahead, they'll question each other directly on the issues in the race. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Peter Hirschfeld, and this is the Attorney General's debate on VPR. Today, the two major candidates for Attorney General, Republican Deb Bucknum and Democrat T.J. Donovan. If you're following along on social media, use the hashtag VPRDebates. In the second half of the debate, the candidates will question each other directly. Questions should not be speeches. We're looking for succinct questions. And we will start with you, Deb. What do you want to ask T.J.?
Yes, thank you. Over the last 10 years, the opioid epidemic has exploded in Chittenden County and across the state and continues to spread. The Deputy Commissioner of Health just said a couple of weeks ago that the epidemic has not reached its peak. My question is, what have you done as a state's attorney to stop the spread of the epidemic, not treating the addicts, but stopping the spread?
T.J. Donovan, one minute.
Thank you, Deb, for the question. Every day for the last 10 years, I have worked on the issue of trying to save people's lives, trying to make our community more safe by addressing the heroin epidemic. And I'm proud of the work I've done. Number one, I've advocated for passage of the Good Samaritan Law, which was passed into law, which essentially says this, that we're going to put a premium on saving people's lives and allow people who are suffering from an overdose to call 911 as opposed to not making a call because fear you're going to get into trouble. And as a result, we save people's lives. Second, I've argued for and advocated for the expansion of Narcan, a reversal drug that is now widely used in this state, carried by first responders. In Burlington alone, over a 2.5-year period, over 700 people's lives have been saved because Narcan has been available. Third, I have been on the front lines of coming up with innovative and creative programs to address the opiate epidemic. Here's the thing. We are not going to arrest our way out of this epidemic. We need a multi-pronged approach, enforcement. I'm proud of my record. I put drug dealers in jail, but I've also given an addict who is struggling a chance for recovery by breaking down the barriers to access to health care.
Thank you, TJ. That's 60 seconds. We're well past. Got to keep it to 60. I appreciate your cooperation. Deb, do you want to offer a 30-second response to what you just heard TJ Donovan say?
TJ, I think those are great programs, but I still haven't heard how the spread of this disease will be stopped. And because it has continued to spread, treating the addicts with the Good Samaritan Law and the Narcan is great, but isn't it a sad commentary that 700 people have had to have their lives saved by Narcan? So, again, my question is, what has been done to stop the spread of the epidemic?
I want to answer that question.
And T.J. Donovan, we're going to give you 20 seconds to do so on this one, so
okay.
Keep it quick.
Sure. Here's the thing. I believe in prevention. I believe in intervention. I believe in treatment. What I have done is work closely with our social service providers and our medical community to create an integrated system of care and accountability to get more doctors involved in this. It is a disease. It needs to be treated. Working hard to reduce that waiting list, creating an approach that is driven by public health strategies, not just law enforcement strategies, Deb. There's no easy answer here. Let's be clear about this. There is no easy answer, but we will not quit on Vermonters. We will not quit fighting this disease, and we will be successful. But it's going to take everybody. It's going to take everybody working together in this state. We need prevention, which I agree with. I know
TJ Donovan, going to be your opportunity now to ask a question to Deb Bucknam. What would you like her to answer?
Well, I want to continue this conversation, Pete. So, Deb, how would you stop the spread of this disease?
That's a great question. Thank you. What I have put forth a 7-point plan to try to stop the spread of this disease. The first thing I'm going to do, as the Democratic Attorney General from Massachusetts did when she went into office, and that is form a task force of everyone who's involved with this terrible epidemic. We're going to find out what the programs are successful, what programs are not successful. We're going to find out what tools people need to make this, to stop this epidemic. So that's the first thing we're going to do. But specifically in regard to prevention, we are going to focus on the drug traffickers. Those are the people we need to get off the streets and get into jail. And how we're going to do that is we're going to coordinate, as you've suggested, Attorney Dedeman, with all the law enforcement agencies in the state. We've got to work together. And we're also going to look at the laws and the criminal code and rules to see if we can have additional tools to help investigate and convict drug traffickers.
TJ Donovan, 30 seconds. Anything you're hearing in there that you think is not the right way to go?
Well, what I didn't hear was accountability for the corporate responsibility in terms of holding big pharmaceutical companies responsible for bearing responsibility for starting this crisis, Deb. So my question to you, Ms. Bucknam, is this. Would you hold the big pharmaceutical companies responsible in your role as Attorney General? Will you pledge today to bring a lawsuit against Big Pharma?
Well, I think you're absolutely right that the pharmaceutical industry bears responsibility for this. But as any good lawyer, I would want to look at the situation. I want to analyze the facts and the law and to see whether that's something that we need to do. I just talked last night to an emergency room doctor who said that he was told that people needed to be prescribed these painkillers from the Centers for Medicaid Services. So we need to look at that to see who actually has been responsible for this. I'm assuming as of today that the pharmaceuticals are responsible, but we need to analyze that.
Well, and you do agree with the Department of Health that just passed the restrictions in terms of capping the number of opiate painkillers that can be prescribed. I mean, I know that in certain op-eds you have been critical of Commissioner Chen's approach to addressing the opiate epidemic. Just last week I stood with Commissioner Chen in advocating for a capping of the number mm-hmm. of these highly addictive painkillers that can be prescribed. Do you support Commissioner Chen's approach?
I think I do. And I'll tell you why. You know, in general, you want professionals to be able to make their own judgments. But again, last night I was talking to someone who was a doctor, who said, you know, it's not a bad thing for us to be able to say, I'm not allowed to prescribe. So I'm learning on that issue.
You are listening to a debate between the major candidates for Attorney General, Republican Deb Bucknam and Democrat T.J. Donovan. If you're following along on social media, use the hashtag VPR debates. Deb Bucknam, it's your turn to ask T.J. Donovan a question.
Attorney Donovan, I know you have talked about the fact that there's too much money in politics. But you've received substantial funds from out-of-state corporations, including Google, Microsoft, Coca-Cola, Comcast, and some out-of-state law firms. And can you assure Vermont voters that you won't be influenced by those donors? And if the money isn't spent on this particular campaign, would you pledge to send that money back to the donors?
TJ Donovan, 60 seconds.
Thank you for the question. There is way too much money in politics, period. And an issue that you and I disagree on is Citizens United. I think Citizens United is a disastrous decision that undermines our democracy. It allows billionaires and millionaires to have an outside influence in our political process by pouring millions of dollars into these super PACs, these so-called independent expenditures. And we disagree in the holding of that case that I do think that those independent expenditures do have a corrupting influence in our political process, because otherwise, why would people be putting millions of dollars into these races? And I know you and I disagree on this other issue. I'm supporting Hillary Clinton for president. I know you're not. I know you said you were undecided, and I respect that. But here's the thing. Why we need Hillary Clinton president is she's going to be able to appoint that ninth Supreme Court justice to get the fifth vote for a majority to overturn Citizens United and return our democracy. As to my campaign,
quickly,
I have raised money in full compliance with Vermont law. And until we overturn Citizens United, I will continue to abide by Vermont law. I'm one of the few Vermont elected officials where a super PAC came in against me. 4 years later, I still can't tell you where the money came in from, by whom, or why. We need greater disclosures in this state regarding where the money's coming from. I trust Vermonters. Put the information out there. Let Vermonters make decisions about whether or not there is undue influence in politics.
Deb Bucknam, let's give Deb an opportunity to respond to that. 30 seconds to talk about what you think about what you just heard from T.J. Donovan.
Well, T.J., as I've said, the real problem with potential corruption is providing money to candidates. And as our system presently is, when someone receives money from campaigns, they can do a number of things with it. One is they can give money to other candidates, which amasses power to themselves. And they also can keep that money and use it for other campaigns. And so that's where the corruption is. It's not in the Citizens United case, whereby that case overturned the Citizens United decision in the Supreme Court because the law banned broadcast of a video 30 days before the election. It was political speech, the most protected kind of speech.
We're running out of time here, and I'm going to give you 15 seconds here, T.J. Donovan, before we go on to the next question.
Okay, but for over 200 years, our Supreme Court nor our Constitution allowed billionaires or corporations to put millions of dollars in these elections until we had a very conservative Supreme Court 5 years, and we can all agree our political process has been corrupted these last 5 years with the amount of money. Here in Vermont, as Attorney General, I'm going to institute a litigation review panel, an independent panel that would, if there is contracts awarded to outside counsel, let's make an independent panel make that judgment, take the elected official out of it, and make sure that we are being transparent and accountable to Vermonters. That's just good government.
TJ, your opportunity now to ask a question of Deb Bucknam.
We get on these themes, and we could be doing this all day. I want to stay on the theme of spending of money in politics.
Yeah.
Ms. Bucknam, if I understand your point, you're advocating to limit spending in politics, to restrict spending. Isn't that inconsistent with the Randall v. Sorrell campaign finance case in which Attorney General Sorrell argued at the U.S. Supreme Court, in which he lost, that put caps and restrictions on spending?
No, I'm not talking about caps on spending. I'm talking about telling candidates as to how they can spend their money.
Wouldn't that be a restriction? Why is that not a restriction on speech then?
Oh, I don't think it's a restriction on speech. It's a restriction. Candidates are restricted from doing lots of things. And by saying to a candidate that you can only use the money on the present campaign certainly is very different. And that would actually level the playing field. Because you've had, as I've said, you've had large corporations donate to your campaign. And frankly, I don't think those large corporations care about the Attorney General's race in Vermont. They are funding your future. And if, in fact, we had a law that said that the money can only be spent on this present campaign and cannot be used to fund other campaigns, then that would, I think, reduce the corruption or the potential for corruption in this in campaign finance.
Would you agree with me that our campaign finance system needs to be reformed and that public financing should be considered?
No, I don't agree that public financing should be considered because that, again, goes down a slippery slope. But we certainly do need campaign finance reform. No question about it.
I want to pop in with a quick question for both of you. Just looking for a 30-second answer here. The current attorney general has hired outside private lawyers to litigate cases on the state's behalf. What do you make of the practice of enlisting outside legal experts to help the state with complex cases? Deb Bucknam?
Well, I think that's certainly can be necessary. Again, we're a small state. We have wonderful lawyers in the Attorney General's office, but there are complex cases that we may have to contract out with outside firms. But here's the thing that I promise. I promise that I will not contract with any outside law firms that have donated to my campaign.
TJ Donovan, you make a similar promise?
I do, and I agree that, look, the law and the legal issues that are being litigated these days are extremely complex and complicated. And if we need a subject matter expert, we should have the ability to hire outside counsel. I have proposed an independent review panel that if we hired outside counsel, it would be based on a decision of a three-member panel, a gubernatorial appointment, an appointee from the Vermont Bar Association, and somebody from the Attorney General's office, but not the elected official. And if the elected official disagreed with that and have to disclose whether or not there's any campaign contributions in order to avoid the appearance of impropriety, and if the elected Attorney General disagreed with the independent review panel, they'd have to put in writing why disclosing any conflict. Again, this is about transparency. We know what's happened in this state, and I know that Ms. Bucknam and I both agree that we want to be able to get the most bang for our buck for Vermonters in order to win these cases so we are not losing taxpayer dollars, but also advancing the cause of progress in so many different areas. But we cannot lose this issue of public trust and transparency. That's why I think my litigation review panel, independent litigation review panel, is a good idea, good government, and good public policy.
This is the Attorney General's debate on VPR, and we have just enough time for a lightning round. We're going to ask you to keep your answers as brief as possible.
I think we're going to have a tough time with that, Pete, but we'll try.
we'll do our best, TJ Donovan, I'm sure here. Let's start with you.
Yeah.
Does the Attorney General's office have a role in addressing global warming?
Yes.
Deb Bucknam.
The Attorney General's office is the chief law enforcement officer of the state. Its prime and only task is to represent the state of Vermont and represent the state of Vermont's employers, the people of Vermont. So if there is an issue involving global warming that the state is involved in, yes, the Attorney General's office would be involved in that. But we're not a policymaking office. We're a nonpartisan office that enforces the laws and represents the state.
Deb Bucknam, we're going to start this second one with you. Did you support Vermont's GMO labeling law?
Well, that, again, is a question that assumes that the Attorney General will use their personal political beliefs in influencing decisions they make at the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General's office has to be above politics and the people have to trust that the decisions we make are fair and impartial to all Vermonters. So that's a policy question that the Attorney General will not deal with.
TJ Donovan, did you support Vermont's GMO labeling law?
I support GMO labeling. I think the role of the Attorney General is to enforce the law, and I think the best way to enforce the law is to give Vermonters the opportunity to comply with it, meaning that I think what we did in instituting a grace period for Vermont small business owners was a good thing. Talked to a small business owner down in Rutland who struggled with compliance of this law because of the national wholesalers and manufacturers whose products were coming in were not in compliance. He called the attorney generals asking for help. They wouldn't help him. We should be doing everything we can to help that small business owner. Here's the thing. I'm for GMO labeling, but I'm also for helping a small business owner get into compliance with the law by offering a little bit of common sense.
In the final lightning round question, TJ Donovan, if you were king for a day and you could get rid of any Vermont law on the books, what would it be?
I do not think that civil violations of traffic tickets should be criminal offenses.
Deb Bucknum, if there's a law on the books that you could get rid of, what would it be?
I would certainly reform drastically the child protection list and the elder protection list. I've represented a number of clients, and most of the people that there are 30,000 people on that list, and they are banned from half the jobs in Vermont, half the jobs. And most of those people are poor or working class people because you are not assigned an attorney when you are put on that list. It's a secret system. It's not a good system, and it keeps people from getting jobs. I would certainly want to reform that.
And finally, a closing question to each of you. Please keep your response to 1 minute. The state is getting a new attorney general for the first time in 20 years. You'll be responsible for hiring staff, setting priorities through your leadership. What stamp are you going to leave on this office, and what is the vision that you have for it that would make it uniquely your own? TJ Donovan.
Thank you, Pete. I'm going to bring common sense and competence to the office of Attorney General. And after 20 years, it's time for a change. It's time to stand up and help hardworking, law-abiding Vermonters, whether it's that small business owner who's struggling to understand the rules and the regs, whether it's somebody who's suffering from addiction, so we break down the barriers to get that person into the healthcare system, to get them sober, to get them back on their feet. That's the best form of public safety. To stand up for people's civil rights, regardless of who you are or where you're from. I'm going to be an attorney general that fights for you and defends your civil rights, protecting our environment, our greatest asset in this state, making sure we protect our lakes, our rivers, that we have clean drinking water, protecting our beautiful landscape, and reforming our criminal justice system, which is some of the best anti-poverty work we can do in the state by investing in restorative justice, not just punitive justice, not having 14 different systems of justice where depending on who you are and what you look like depends on the outcome, making sure that we truly have one system of justice where all Vermonters are treated fairly, respectfully, and with dignity. That's what I'm going to do as Attorney General.
And Deb Bucknum, what is going to define a Bucknum administration as Attorney General?
Yes, I've been practicing for 37 years as a private attorney. I've never been a government attorney. I practice in a small town, and I've represented thousands of small business people and individuals, mostly mothers on reach up, working class people, loggers, carpenters, and middle class people. I have never represented big corporations, so I bring those values to the Attorney General's office, and I bring a small business person's perspective, signing the check on the front of a payroll check. to the Attorney General's office. So we're going to look to results, and we're going to analyze the programs and the policies that we have right now and the priorities and to see if they're working, because that's what small business people have to do. If you're not doing it right, you don't have any customers. So that's what we're going to bring, and I am beholden to absolutely no one. So I'm going to have the freedom to reform the badly needed reform in the Attorney General's office.
And with that, we conclude the debate for Attorney General on Vermont Edition. You've been listening to Republican Deb Bucknum and Democrat TJ Donovan. Thanks to both of you for taking part. Our debate series continues tomorrow with the treasurer's race. This is your chance to learn about the treasurer's office and the candidates' approaches to the job. We'll hear their stances on managing the state pension funds, divestment from fossil fuels, and other issues. You can still submit your questions to the candidates. Email VermontEdition at vpr.net and listen live to the state treasurer's debate tomorrow. I'm Peter Hirschfeld. Thanks for listening.